I was born with this chronic pain disorder that causes you to experience pain when you're sleeping, when you're walking, basically when you're doing anything. And for a long time, growing up in church and knowing about God, I asked over and over again why God would give someone that. Why would God choose to give someone a healthy body and then choose to give someone else a broken, dysfunctional one? And I think in those questions, I was so ashamed and I felt very unlovable because there was something that was wrong with me that now people had to accommodate. Now people had to go out of their way to help me. And I hated that. And so I fought it and I fought God. And even though God was always present in those times, he would always be there saying, you know, Paige, give me your weakness. I want to take your brokenness because in me, that's where you'll find strength. But I didn't like that either because it was another person who had to go out of their way to help me and I wanted to be able to do it by myself. I would go on these runs that even though it killed my joints and I'd be in so much pain that I would be crying. Tears would be streaming down my face as I was running up these hills for miles, just in excruciating pain, trying to prove to myself and to God that I could do it, that I could handle it. And God was patient through that. And then in college, I experienced a different type of weakness. I was hit pretty hard with anxiety, and my thoughts started racing with patterns of just fear and anxiety and worry. And it was right about up until when I needed to get hip surgery. So the pain was super bad, and then my anxiety hit. And God was still there, present, actively pursuing me. Like, Paige, I know weakness, and I know what you're going through. I hung on a tree for you. Like, I know pain, I know this. And he just kept reaching out and being so persistent in teaching me what it would mean to go to him for my source of strength. Finally, I said okay, and I let God take control of my life instead of trying to control it. And I let God be my strength. And he didn't take away my multiple epiphyseal dysplasia. And to this day, I still have a lot of pain. And although his goodness is exemplified in physical and emotional healing, what God cared about most was my soul. Even though I was born physically broken and I was born prone with anxiety, I was also born a sinner. And God wanted throughout my whole life to redeem that. He used my physical and my emotional brokenness to illustrate kind of the same condition of my soul. And through that, I came to know God, and I came to know what it means to have God as your strength, and to realize that even though in this world we're going to have suffering and there's going to be pain, it's not ultimately what we put our hope in. But our ultimate hope is not based on what comes after suffering, but on the presence of God's healing spirit in the midst of that suffering.
Paige, thank you so much for just being an inspiration to us and to me. That was a very powerful testimony. Thank you. So on that, we're talking about who is Jesus and Jesus as healer. And I want to tell you a story about a man who was born blind in John chapter 9. Often in first century Rome, people would lose their sight from disease or injury or lack of what we would call good medical attention, but this man was born blind. He had never seen before. I mean, his life, his worldview, everything that he knew was from touch. It was from sound. It was from taste. Anything but sight. I mean, think about it. He had never seen a tree before. He had never seen water before. He'd never seen his parents or his friends. I mean, think of a world where you have never even known what you look like. Maybe you don't, and you don't even know what people look like. I mean, he had never seen a sunset before. He'd never seen a sunrise. If someone said the word light to him, like the light of a fire or the light of a sun, he would have no clue what they were talking about. And because it was the first century Rome, and because it was a society where you needed to work hard to earn food and to earn shelter, he had to rely on others to live. There wasn't a job for him to excel at without his sight. So he did the only thing that he could do. He sat somewhere near the temple, which was the religious and economic hub of Jerusalem, and he begged. I mean, it was either beg or die. It was a dark world, but a dark world was the only world that he knew until one day. I mean, he was probably sitting with his back to the temple wall when he heard something. He overheard this conversation that a few people were having. And apparently, to his surprise, the people were talking about him, which was probably a shocker. I mean, normally people would just pass on by him and just pretend that he didn't exist. I mean, the only impact that this blind man had on society was taking from others so that he could eat, so that he could drink, so that he could live. And as he listened to those voices talking about him, he heard that they were discussing why he was blind. I mean, something that he'd probably heard before, at least when he was younger. And then he realized something. He realized that one of the men who were talking was Jesus. Jesus was the rabbi that was turning Jerusalem inside out by his teachings and his miracles. And then he heard Jesus say that he was born blind so that the works of God might be displayed in him. The works of God might be, what is he talking about? And then he heard Jesus finish by saying, "I am the light of the world." I mean, whatever light was. I mean, he'd heard a lot about light, but he'd never seen it. He'd never experienced it. So the blind man, he probably leaned in to just hear a little bit more about light and what Jesus had to say. And as he was leaning in, something happened to him. He was touched. His eyes were touched. And then something was being spread on this man's eyes, and it was a shocking touch to him. But it was also an intimate touch. It was shocking because no one had ever intentionally touched him before, probably for months. And it was intimate because he was getting touched on his eyes. It was the source of all his pains, the source of all his troubles. His eyes were the source of all his shame, and his eyes were being touched. And then Jesus said to the blind man, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam." And then slowly realizing that his eyes were just covered in this mud from the dirt that he was just sitting on. And Jesus' saliva, which was fine to him because saliva was known to have or thought to have some healing properties in it. So he's like, all right. And so he had this decision to make in front of him. When Jesus said, "Go and wash in the pool of Siloam," he could either sit and remain as he was, because the pool of Siloam was a long ways away from where he was. And it was long for anyone to walk in the heat of the day, especially for a blind man. And Jesus was being slandered by most people who considered themselves religious. Most people didn't listen to Jesus. And when they did, they were often slandered too. Or he could trust. He could get up to go, to wash. And as Jesus' hands slipped away from his eyes, he made his decision. He got up. He chose to trust Jesus, even though many didn't. Because the intimacy behind the mud and the spit were like healing salve on the source of all his shame. So he walked. And he slowly made it to the top of these long stairs that went down from the temple, kind of where he was at, all the way to the pool of Siloam. And it was a journey that he probably didn't make too much. I mean, the stairs were always crowded, and the distance from where he was at to the pool from the stairs was at least 1,300 yards. But the blind man went nonetheless. He went to the stairs and he started walking down, and he probably tripped a few times. I mean, think about it. Someone probably ran into him and probably made him fall. He probably rolled a couple times around the stairs. And then people knew that he was walking down, and they saw that he was blind, and they kind of cleared a path for him probably, but not because they were trying to help him out, but because he was viewed as unclean, as dirty. And to touch someone who was unclean meant that you were unclean. So he got to the bottom of the stairs, and then he heard a lot of noise and water. He heard that, and finally, he made it to the pool. So he probably dropped to his knees, and his small rocks were probably digging in his kneecaps, and he felt in front of him, and there was no pool. So he probably shuffled a little bit forward and feeling his way, and still no pool. So he probably shuffled a little bit more, and then finally, okay, he gripped the pool's edge, and then he reached down and took a handful of water, and he washed the mud off his eyes. And then something happened that had never happened before. Something that he'd never experienced in his life or even in his dreams. It was so powerful. It was so beautiful that he didn't need any explanation of what it was. For the first time, he saw light. His world of darkness was now being flooded with light. And as the mud dripped down his chest into the pool, he glanced down and he saw his reflection for the first time. He finally knew what he looked like. And then he glanced up and he saw people for the first time. And he looked around and he saw a tree. He saw rocks. He saw the sun, and he probably started to cry. And then as tears rushed down his eyes that now could see, he ran as fast as he could to the top of the stairs that he just walked down, the stairs that he just tripped down when he was blind. And as he was running, the light not only entered his eyes, but it entered his heart, because that's what light does. Light has the ability to invade every dark place, if we let it. By trusting the one that touched him, he could now see. When he made it to his home where he was going, his parents were just shocked and they were so overjoyed. But his neighbors, they were confused. I mean, some recognized him, while some said that he only looked like the man who was blind. And there was just so much commotion going on around this man that the religious leaders, the same ones who were so against Jesus, the man who had healed him, they came to see what was going on. When the once blind man, they asked him, "What happened? Tell us." He said, "Okay." He talked to him about the pool, the mud, and that he was healed from Jesus. And the Pharisees were furious. You see, the same sort of thing happened a little bit ago at a different pool with a different man who was crippled. Jesus healed him too. And both of these took place on the Sabbath. And in the Pharisees' eyes, Jesus sinned, because there was a certain amount of work that was involved in this healing process. And to top it all off, the last time this happened, when they questioned Jesus, Jesus told them that he was the fulfillment of the scriptures. Jesus told them that he was from God, that he was equal to God. Jesus told them that he was light. And because of this, the Jewish leader said that anyone who acknowledged Jesus as the Messiah was to be thrown out of the synagogue, their religious center, thrown out, excommunicate them. And this excommunication, that was just the thought of that, was almost too hard for anyone to bear. And not believing the blind man, the Pharisee turned and went to his parents. The Pharisees went to his parents and they asked, "Hey, what happened?" And fearing that they would be kicked out of church and society, They said to the Pharisees, go ask my son again. Go ask him, because he was of age to speak for himself. So the Pharisees once again turned and went to their son, the once blind man who was just beaming because of light, because of sight, because of what Jesus had done. And the Pharisees, full of anger, said to him, give glory to God by telling the truth, because we know that this man, Jesus, is a sinner. You see, darkness was the only thing that the once blind man knew. I mean, darkness from society and how they treated him, darkness from all the hungry nights that he had because he was blind and poor, darkness from thinking that your life was just sin. And it was dark because of that you were sin. And literal darkness because he had the inability to physically see light. And because darkness was the only thing that this once blind man knew, when light came in, he recognized it as light clearly. I mean, yeah, he didn't know who Jesus really was and he didn't really know much about him, but he knew what Jesus did for him. So he said to the Pharisees, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. So he was kicked out. He was excommunicated. And he was alone once again, but this time with sight. And he probably realized the pain of being able to see, but having no one make eye contact with him. So Jesus went out and found him. Because Jesus wasn't okay with him being kicked out and alone. And Jesus went to him and he probably looked deep in his eyes. And with the Pharisees just an earshot away, Jesus said to the once blind man, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said, you have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Then Jesus said in a louder voice, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. And when the Pharisees heard this, they became even more furious. But Jesus didn't explain himself like he did in the last time when he healed the crippled man. He didn't say that he was the Son of God once again to them. He didn't say that he was the fulfillment of scriptures. He did before, but before they didn't listen. I mean, his words tried to give light to them at that time, but they chose darkness. So the Pharisees came to Jesus and said, what? Are we blind too? And Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. You can be spiritually blind, but physically see. And you can be physically blind, but spiritually see. Because according to the gospel writer John, Jesus is the light of the world. And if you choose to see Jesus, the light, then you can truly see. But if you choose to not recognize Jesus, the light, you're spiritually blind. The Pharisees were blind, and the blind man could see because the light of the world is Jesus. And only those who acknowledge Jesus as God can truly see. And at first glance, this story in John, many can think that it's just a story that's primarily centered around healing for the sake of healing. I mean, that Jesus is God because he can heal. But this story isn't here to just showcase Jesus as the one who, you know, isn't bound by the natural. And in this discussion in this chapter, it isn't around Jesus' ability to perform the supernatural. This chapter is centered around who Jesus is. And in this story, Jesus is the healer. But the why behind Jesus as healer is something that we don't want to miss. I mean, often, especially in this case, Jesus heals surface or physical issues in order to break in and heal inner and spiritual issues. I mean, whether the issue is believing in Jesus or seeking his help in different life circumstances that we're facing, because one of the most important issues to Jesus is healing or reconciling humanity. And this is something that only he, as God, can do. It's light conquering the dark for our sake. And it's our invitation from Jesus to recognize the light as Jesus, no matter the circumstance, to strive to be Jesus' people in everything, or to look away, to be blind. The blind man was healed so that the world may see, but the world chose to remain blind. And the same is true for us today. So for the rest of our time today, I'm going to walk through three reasons why people can choose to remain spiritually blind. The first is because it's hard to believe. So I remember a few months ago, I was in my apartment and I was about to eat what I call healthy nachos for dinner. Yes, my friends laugh too when I try to tell them it's healthy nachos. They're like, nachos can't be healthy, but it's a sacred dinner that I have about 4 to 5 times a week, so I don't listen. I mean, I went to Trader Joe's earlier. I don't know if you guys can relate to this, and I got some of the healthy nacho chips. I mean, they had the words quinoa and black beans in them, so you know what I mean. I bought some cheese. I risked myself. It said organic cheese. Got it. Didn't really know what the organic meant for that. And then I got free-range chicken. I got cowboy caviar. Any fans of that salsa? Praise him. I mean, that has chunks of corn in that salsa. Basically, I'm eating a salad. That's basically what I'm doing. So I got all the ingredients, got home. I sculpted this just beautiful mat. You know when you're making food and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to eat this. I sculpted this and I put it in the great microwave. And then I let it do its thing. And then I took the plate out and I'm not joking. I have a chair in your house and it's your chair. I call it my comfy Netflix chair. So it's big and I sat in my comfy Netflix chair and it was great. And I sat down and I'm ready to eat basically salad, technically nachos. And true story, it was going up to my mouth and then I heard my phone. My phone went off and I'm like, yeah, right. But then, because nachos. And then I heard my phone ring again. And I'm like, oh gosh, who is it? Normally I would ignore it. And I looked and it was my brother. And I thought, okay, why is my brother calling? You know when a family member calls you outside of a time when they don't normally call you? So you're like, oh gosh, like is something, did a house, like what happened? What's going on? So I looked at my nachos, looked at the phone, it rang the third time, and I sadfully pushed my nachos away. And sadfully isn't a word, sorrowfully, whatever. I couldn't think. I was just emotionally distraught. And then I answered the phone, and I began to talk. And so my younger brother, he is a husband and a father of just two beautiful kids. And I've actually been praying for my brother to know Jesus for a really, really, really long time now. And there was some kind of like minor, it wasn't a big deal, but he just really needed to talk about it. So we talked and we were there and we were talking and we actually started talking about what a father means. It was something that he was going through and the hardships of being a father. And then we talked about our father. And then we were talking about my brother as a father. And then he started making fun of me because I'm the only brother of three that isn't a father. And he's really nice. You know, younger brothers have to make fun of you. And then when I was talking with him, I got this burning sensation. You know, I don't know if you get this sometimes when you're talking with someone who you're just, you want them to know Jesus. And you're like, oh gosh, I think I got to talk to him about Jesus. And you feel it and you're like, okay, I'm gonna do it. So I saw the line was open. I went in. I took the opportunity. And normally when I would talk about Jesus with my brother, he would just kind of shut down. He usually changes the conversation real quick because there's just too many things for my brother that can't be fully proved. And because of that, he doesn't believe in Jesus. So typically, he doesn't even engage in the conversation. But I saw the opportunity. I took it. And to my surprise, we actually started talking about God as Father. We talked about that for a while. And then we started talking about God himself for a long time. And then we started talking about a lot of things. We talked about, I kid you not, like the just great, like things that people often struggle with, like the complexities of the virgin birth and how creation in itself was kind of created out of nothing like the virgin birth. And then we talked about the historical evidence of Jesus and outside of the Bible. And we talked a lot about just God being a God of love in a world that desperately needed love. And then finally, after all of our talking, he became an antagonist of the conversation and said that, Michael, if we just had 100% undeniable proof for everything about who Jesus is, I'd believe. But right now, faith in Jesus is just too big of a gamble for me. Okay? So we chatted a little bit more. I told him I loved him, and I told him that I forgive him for making my nachos get cold. I was kind of like struggling with that during the conversation. And then we hung up. And I couldn't help but think after that, just the connection to what the blind man and the Pharisees, and Jesus and the Pharisees. And when Jesus healed the blind man, the Pharisees, they didn't need proof about miracles. In fact, they witnessed multiple miracles, multiple healings. Supernaturalism was actually kind of commonly accepted around there. But like my brother, they just couldn't believe in who Jesus is because they didn't have the full proof of what they were looking for. I mean, it was the same conversation, but with different questions. And although this conversation, just about who Jesus is, It's a super important one to have. And although the questions are really important to ask, and although doubt is not bad, an investigation into faith and who Jesus is healthy and good, and debates can be healthy and good. And although this journey shouldn't necessarily be rushed, eventually we'll have to make the choice with all of the information that we have to get up, to walk, to go and let the dirt be washed off, to look at and experience the light. The second reason people can choose to remain spiritually blind is questioning, does he even care? I've had a few health problems that modern medicine has been able to fix, and I'm healthy, and I've never physically suffered for so long with no cure in sight. And that's why I was so blown away, Paige, by your testimony at the beginning. And to view physical suffering as a way that God heals inner or spiritual issues is something that I just don't have too much authority to talk on. A while back, going on this theme of theological conversations, especially around food, which actually is a really important thing, and I encourage everyone to do that as often as you can. Just invite someone, initiate it, talk about faith around food, and you grow a lot in community and in Jesus and what we believe. And so I was in that kind of context at a restaurant with a friend, and the lights were kind of getting dim, as some, you know, restaurants do when it's around dinner time. And we just finished eating when we began to have a conversation about God. Specifically, if he's a God of love, then why is there so much suffering? We talked about original sin. We talked about how death and suffering was humanity's choice, and the implications that original sin has on the world today, which often has left me with more questions than answers, to be honest. And we talked about Jesus, about humanity's suffering and how Jesus put that on himself. And that one day, when the kingdom is fully realized, Jesus will wipe away every tear from our eyes, that there will be no more death, disease, or suffering. And we talked about how Jesus was revolutionary by taking a stand against social suffering, emotional suffering, and how he performed countless miracles to heal physical suffering. I mean, we talked about secondhand stories from people we know who had witnessed a miracle, someone being healed. We talked about different doctors who we personally know who have witnessed what they can only describe as something supernatural that took place with one of their patients. And as this conversation went on, I found myself slowly becoming the antagonist. I tell my friend, he looked at me And he said, Michael, yes, there's still a lot of suffering that doesn't get healed in this lifetime. But imagine, if you will, what it would look like if there was no God. He said that if there was no God, the problems of evil and suffering, they're in no way solved. I mean, without God, there would be no hope of ultimate justice or of suffering being made meaningful or transcendent or redemptive or redeemable. And then he leaned in a little bit, got a little closer, and he said, Michael, yes, it might be true that there is no God to blame now, but neither is there a God to reach out to for strength, ultimate meaning, or comfort. And then he asked me a question that I chewed on for a long time. He said, why would we seek the alleviation of suffering if there wasn't an objective morality already grounded in a God of justice? Why would we seek the alleviation of suffering if there wasn't an objective morality already grounded in a God of justice? A God who cares about those who suffer. A God who loves and created people like Paige. Jesus the healer is not for suffering. He's against it. Both the outward suffering and the inward spiritual suffering, or what John refers to as darkness. Now, the third reason that people can choose to remain spiritually blind is the familiar phrase, you don't know what I've done. I've often talked with people who says that they think they've just sinned too big or messed up so much that God would not possibly forgive them. Or maybe God would forgive them, but he would never fully forget what they've done. And when we have this conversation, I'll often bring up the Apostle Paul. Now, the Pharisees who excommunicated the once blind man, they were pretty against Jesus, but Paul was way worse. I mean, Paul encouraged the killing of the first Christian martyr, Stephen. And Paul would often travel from town to town with one goal in mind, to persecute and eventually destroy the early church. I mean, Paul took prisoners and condemned them to death and fought all those who claimed Jesus as God. Until one day, Paul, who was first called Saul, was traveling to Damascus. Acts reads, and as he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? Saul asked. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting, he replied. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind, and he did not eat or drink anything. And after 3 days of darkness, after 3 days of quiet, after 3 days of experiencing the light of Jesus, who he fought so diligently against, a man named Ananias, who knew about Saul's legacy of persecuting the church, came to him. You see, God called Ananias to play a role in Saul's healing. So Ananias entered the house that Paul was sitting in and placed his hands on Saul. And then suddenly, something like scales fell from Saul's eyes. He could see again. So he got up. He walked. And he was baptized. And as the water dripped down his chest, he understood Jesus as the light of the world for the first time. He was once blind, but now he could see. I mean, Paul experienced God's radical free gift of grace, regardless of all the persecution and sins that he personally committed against Jesus and Jesus' followers. And if there's grace for him, friends, there's grace for you. So I'll never forget this one hot summer day in LA. It was 105 degrees, and I was walking the streets, and it was just outside of Skid Row, and I had 10 eighth grade boys with me. Fun. So we were walking, and we were actually on a mission trip. It was a really cool thing, and we were given an afternoon project to find someone who was in a state of homelessness and take them to lunch. So, great. We walked around with that project, and we just passed countless people living on the streets until we reached this one young man. He was in his late teens. He was in rags. He was holding a jar, asking for money. He was in front of KFC, and he was trying to make eye contact with anyone and everyone who passed. So we asked him to lunch. He said, hey, do you want to go to lunch with us? So we did. He said yes, and we went into KFC. And it took us a while. It took a while for him to talk. At first, the teenager, he just sat down and stared at us. And I remember just looking deep into his eyes for a long time because he wouldn't look away from my eyes. It was a holy moment. And when he finally talked, he said that his parents were abusive, that they were drug addicts, that they kicked him out, and that he'd been in front of this KFC for 2 months. And each day he sat there with his jar, and each day he looked up at anyone and everyone that walked by him. And at first he was just concerned about money and food. But after weeks went by, he just wanted someone to look at him, someone to notice him. And then he said something that I'll never forget. He said that in the last 2 months, we were the first people who were not homeless to intentionally look him in the eyes. And then he leaned in, and he said in a quiet, really broken voice, he was crying, he said that for the past few months, he's felt like an outcast. He feels less than human, unclean. And he said that it was almost as if people were blind and couldn't see him. And that we'll never know the impact that it had on him, that we chose to look at him, to see him. And friends, Jesus sees you. And the reality is that over and over and over again, he's stopping to just look at you, to just be with you, to stare deep into your eyes as if you are the only one in the world, as if you're the only one in the created universe that matters to him, to be fully seen and fully loved. Friends, that can bring about a deeper inner spiritual healing, one that you have never experienced before. And he's looking at you. His invitation, his hope, is that you can learn to trust him, to get up, to walk. Even though the steps may be hard, and even if you're pushed and you fall over and over and over again in the process, whatever circumstance you're in, what would trust take? Even if it's just one step. And when you're brought to the pool of trust to wash, to be baptized by his radical free gift of grace. And friends, although this world is dark, the light of the world has come. The healer is here, and his purpose, his heart, his mission is to love the world into seeing him so that all could say, I was once blind, but now I see. Let's pray. Jesus, I can't help but think how although some of us are physically hurting right now, we need to be physically healed. I would just say, because I put myself into that category, Jesus, most of us, there's emotional hurt. There's spiritual hurt. Trust has been hurt. God, we're walking in this world and it can be dark. This world can also be light. And I pray, God, that you show us, continue to show us mercy, because you delight in it. That you continue to show us your light. And God, that when we're in the darkness, wherever we are at in that, that we can know the presence of you. And God, most of us have not seen you before. We don't know what it's like to physically look into your eyes, but you see us. And you are looking into our eyes. And I pray that we can continue to let you and your love transform us. In your name we pray.